This is a Fox News alert. A Trump news conference about to start. I'm Dave Anthony. The day after becoming a convicted felon.
The former president has told Fox News Digital that he plans to fight this verdict. They will appeal. He also told Fox News Digital that this verdict is a stain on the New York judicial system.
Fox Business Network's Lydia Hu at Trump Tower in New York, where he'll speak any minute.
We're learning just moments ago from the Trump campaign that since 6 p.m. last night, the Trump campaign has raised $34.9 million just on that of this verdict.
And that is not a surprise to House Speaker Mike Johnson, who tells Fox,
"This will increase turnout on our side. He will win decisively. He will become the next president."
He is among many Trump-supporting Republicans who agree with the former president calling the trial a disgrace. Congressman Byron Donalds tells Fox,
"The radical left have now proven in Lower Manhattan that they will destroy the institutions of America just to keep political power."
The jury convicted the former president of falsifying records related to payments to keep an alleged affair quiet before the 2016 election. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said,
"I did my job. Our job is to follow the facts and the law without fear or favor."
President Biden's campaign says no one is above the law. It is also fundraising off the verdict.
An email this morning reads, "Convicted felon or not, Trump will be the Republican nominee for president. But there is one other certainty. As you read this, Donald Trump's supporters are fired up and likely setting fundraising records for his campaign."
And Fox's Jackie Heinrich in the White House. We don't know if President Biden will say anything about the Trump verdict today. He is expected to talk later about the war in Gaza and the Middle East. We just got news out of the Senate. Joe Manchin is leaving the Democratic Party, saying he is independent now. Senator Manchin not running for re-election this year in West Virginia. America's listening to Fox News.
Weather's warming up, and I can't wait to get to the ranch this summer to paint, to roam. Cool summer nights with my family, being out by the campfire. I remember when I couldn't do a lot of these things because the altitude created a constant unbearable pain for me. My wife Tanya insisted that I tried Relief Factor. I didn't think it would work for me. It's a 100% drug-free daily supplement. It's supposed to help your body fight pain naturally. I mean, I went to the best doctors in the world, and they couldn't help me. I didn't think this would work. Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients. It doesn't just mask the pain. It reduces or even eliminates it by reducing the inflammation in your body. Wherever you're hurting, back, neck, joint, muscles, in 3 weeks or less, you will start to feel the difference all day, every day. I've been taking Relief Factor for years now, and it has truly changed my life. ReliefFactor.com, 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF. Save on your first order, 800-4-RELIEF, Relief Factor.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
And a very good final day of May to all of you. From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Scott Gross. Yuma police are investigating a shooting that occurred near 4th Avenue and 16th Street. It took place Thursday morning. Suspect is taken into custody and faces multiple charges, including attempted murder.
Lots of sunshine for us here today
degree.
As we finish out the Alice business
Burn
week.
Elementary
a bit of a south breeze.
School were briefly on lockdown as a precaution. And U.S. lawmakers are fighting for senior Border Patrol agents to get the overtime pay they were promised. Arizona Senior Senator Kyrsten Sinema and other lawmakers are urging the U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary to implement the overtime pay, which was actually signed last December, but has not yet taken effect. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all of your local news, weather, and sports. I'm Scott Gross.
Lots of sunshine for us here today as we finish out the business week. A bit of a south breeze developing this afternoon to 20 miles per hour or more, all the way up to near 104 this afternoon, and more triple-digit readings for the weekend and even into next week. Clear skies tonight near 70, sunny skies, and 103 for Saturday, sunny and 102 Sunday, mostly sunny skies, and 102 for Monday, Tuesday, and then hotter for the middle and end of next week. I'm meteorologist Ken Boone at the Weather Channel.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Hey, Yuma Money Talk, AM560 KBLU. Happy Friday out there. We're working on here. We got it going, Russ. All right. Russ Clark's here and Tom Rush.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. George Davis Sr.
Senior.
Yeah, starting to heat up a little bit.
Yeah, it is.
Swimming pool time and summertime. It's nice.
Do you have a pool in the backyard?
I do.
That was a good move.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, especially with kids.
And especially with kids.
When my daughter was in second grade, we had pool. We swam every night.
Uh-huh.
Every night. Yeah. That girl learned to swim in our backyard. You know.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it worked out. If I had a pool now, I wouldn't get used that much. But back when you got kids, it's a good investment at that point.
It is a good investment.
Yeah.
I was swimming it the other day, and pretty nice. I was thinking, I should do this every day.
Yeah, so, you need to stay fit too, man.
Yeah,
not just the kids.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. So, hey, Tom, I've got a surgery coming up Tuesday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, on my sinus surgery. I've had a sinus infection for, he doesn't know how long. I haven't long carried this thing around like luggage for years.
That's going to be ugly.
Oh, man.
You got black eyes.
I had a video with the doctor and
stuff.
What
are they going to do, scrape your nose or something?
Well, he described it like this, and I thought it was pretty interesting. If you know how back in the olden days you have a house and you walk in, you got the dining room and another room, a living room.
Yeah.
It's not open concept like everybody loves now.
They cut down all the walls.
Yeah, yeah, with the polyps and places to get the infection to get trapped. They go in and they open everything up now.
Is your wife making you do it?
Well, no, but she's going to be there to give me a ride home because we're going to Phoenix and doing it.
Well, I'm thinking, no, but I'm sure when you have that kind of blockage, that kind of thing, you probably snore like, you know, a bulldog.
Last night she said she's not sleeping in the same room.
Hey, just so you know, Russ, hey, probably anything that George does, his wife has something to say about it.
That's good. That's because he's a good husband.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's okay.
I also have to stay elevated for the first 3 days. So I'm like, well, you're going to be
elevate your feet or your head. Make sure you get the right one.
I'm sleeping over here, man.
Did it actually break your nose or no?
They strained the septum because
it's going to be worse than that.
Stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to hurt like crazy.
Oh, it's bad for 2 or 3 days.
So let's talk money. Money talk, George, not medical talk.
Hey, well, I thought it was pretty interesting.
I'm liking to watch him squirm over here.
Is insurance covering it?
Yes.
Because it's mandatory or something? I mean,
he says if you leave, I go, why don't I just leave it alone? I've had it forever. And he goes, that's just as bad because the infection goes to your brain or your eyes, you're in trouble.
Good Lord.
I know. So, nuts.
Here's kind of an update on where things are at with the market. This is as of May 27th. So it's, 4 days off. Dow was up 4.4%. You want to explain to people real quick what the Dow is?
Dow, Tom, is 30 U.S. stocks that have been there for a long time. So it's an index that measures those 30 stocks.
Yeah, and the S&P 500 is up 11.8.
Okay, so that's 500 U.S. stocks. That involves more.
Yeah. Now, what's the issue with S&P 500 nowadays? I mean, we've been going. The S&P 500 has been an index, and people use it the last 50 years.
I got this one. So problem with the S&P index, there's no rebalancing. So some of the big hitters like NVIDIA and
Microsoft.
Apple and Microsoft that go up in value, double, they're proportionately in the index, they double also. No one takes profits or lowers that percentage, so they can be heavily weighted in certain sectors.
So the seven companies are what weighted?
Ooh, 18.
Almost 40% now.
Oh, man.
So really, in the all tech companies, NVIDIA, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon. So basically, the S&P 500 is almost like a 40% tech fund.
Okay.
So the numbers are really good. And everyone says, oh, we didn't beat the S&P. Those seven companies have driven it up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, they might drive it down a lot, too, because it's heavily weighted. So
you know what's interesting, as a side note, Tom, there are ETFs or funds out there that will do the index rating
rebalance
for the S&P 500 for you. So if you want...
No, they rebalance it.
Yeah, they'll rebalance it. Let's say everybody's 2%. They'll rebalance it when it gets out of whack. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But in talking about NVIDIA, they announced a 10-for-1 stock split. Did you see that coming up in June?
I did, George.
Yeah. So they're...
NASDAQ's up 12.15, NASDAQ 100. S&P growth is up 16%. S&P 500 value is up 6%. So growth is still doing quite a bit better than value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the trap there, George? Tell the listeners, growth and value.
What's the trap or what's the difference?
Just talk about it.
So growth is the high-flying techs, companies that have more growth to them. And then the value are more like McDonald's and companies that pay dividends.
So growth are companies that are basically taking all the money and funneling it back into the company, and they're growing at a high rate. And they could be making profits. And value are companies that are making money. A lot of them pay dividends, and the money, you know, gets printed every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, here's one of the big challenges I have with clients is everyone over time and usually tries to chase which one's doing better.
Yeah, why would I want to be in growth if it's just doing the best right now?
Well, I mean, growth is doing well. It could go up again for another 3 years. So I always tell people growth and value is kind of like being putting a foot on each side of the fence. And you really want to own both because ultimately, you know, there'll be times when value does well for many years. And if you miss out on one of those, then it could become not as great. To give an idea, last year growth was up like 25% in 23. Value was only up like 5%. So imagine if you're on the wrong side of the fence and you got your 5% only.
Mm-hmm. But there's been years where that's probably been flipped.
Oh, no, it does flip. Yeah. That's the point. Like if you get on one side of the fence and you usually chase the numbers, and, you know, that's what you want to do. The international market's up 7.12, so that's pretty interesting.
I was a little surprised by that one.
Emerging markets up 6.71. What's emerging markets, George? See how good you are.
Emerging market, international or developed internationals like the UK and Japan.
Now, emerging markets
go ahead.
We'll finish, though.
I was giving an example of the developed international compared to the emerging. The emergings are more countries like, I think they still consider China emerging, but more like
smaller companies.
Smaller countries.
GDP, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is the sectors that's doing the best is communications, up 21.6%. The one that's doing the worst is real estate.
Mm.
I think with inflation and interest rates going up, I'm sure real estate's
the only negative sector this year, correct?
Yep. Informational technology is up 19%. So really, for the first 6 months of the year, it's not too bad. I mean, if things continue, the Dow will be up 8%. You know, S&P, NASDAQ will be up, you know, if it continues. It never does. It's not like it's a staircase that just keeps going up every month. Now, what's the area that's really getting beat up this year that is negative across the board? Starts with a B, George.
Bitcoin?
Bonds.
Not Bitcoin. Bonds, yes.
So U.S. Treasury Intermediates down.
I was going to say Bitcoin, too.
Down 0.79%. Ginnie Mae 30 years down 1.97%. Corporate high yields almost flat. Oh, no, excuse me, is down 1.6%. No, corporate high yields up 1.6%. But most of the bond funds are down about 1 to 1.5%. So
I got a question from a listener.
Yep.
Wants to know if a stock split is necessarily a good thing. Prices can drop on the stock even if you have more.
I think overall it's a good thing because what happens is that like NVIDIA, I think it's $1,000 a share.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even to buy one share is $1,000. So I think people are more likely to buy a stock if it's cheaper and they can afford it. To give you an idea, Berkshire Hathaway, I think, is 500,000. The A share is 500,000.
A share?
Well, we can look it up. Look it up, George. But basically, they never did a stock split. So if you buy the Berkshire Hathaway A, I'm pretty sure it's upwards of $500,000. So
it's an emotional thing.
Yeah, it's almost like you go to a store and you only have a dollar in your pocket. Well, guess what? You're not going to buy anything that's more than a dollar.
But you can buy partial shares now. You can say, give me, you know, 0.35 of a share, you know.
You can, and with some companies, like I don't think at Schwab you can.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, there's some companies where you can buy partial. When you buy partial shares, I think they charge you more internal fees than that.
Okay.
But I think it's overall it's a good thing. And if you own the stock, it's a good thing because now if you have a 10-for-1 stock split and it goes up, you know, 10 cents, well, that's equivalent to a dollar, you know, after the stock split.
Right.
So I would say it's a good thing.
The other good thing, Russ, on a stock split is it does help the employees. And that's why I was watching the guy on the CEO for NVIDIA, and one of the reasons they did that 10-for-1 stock split is they want their employees to be able to make it more affordable for shares, like Tom was saying.
Okay.
But if you're doing a stock option in your 401k where you can buy NVIDIA shares because you're an employee, they wanted to make it more affordable for them to be able to buy in their 401k the individual shares.
And I'm sure there's a history on it somewhere, like after a stock split, stocks do well or something. I'm sure somebody's tracking that.
Well, they usually do well to the run-up point, you know, and then when they split and people forget about it after 2 or 3 months,
okay.
Sometimes it's a bounce down. But, you know, you really can't tell.
But normally people split a stock when the stock is doing well. It's reached higher levels. It's doing well. They split it at that point.
Correct. So a lot of stuff's going on. I guess so the first 6 months of this year technically has done well except for bonds. So yeah, things.
So the bonds is a little bit intriguing. Why are the bonds not doing well when interest rates are higher and people should be buying?
Good point.
Well,
I mean, aren't interest rates higher? So people are putting, you know, purchasing bonds, and usually when you purchase them, would the bond price improve? Why are the bonds, you know, flat or a little bit negative, Tom?
Go ahead and answer that question yourself, George. Because think about it. At the beginning of the year, they said the Fed was going to lower rates 4 times. That was the number. Then it became 3 times and then 2. And now they're saying 1 if we're lucky and maybe not till 25. So I think the bond market had this stuff priced in. Because when interest rates go down, the price of bonds go up. So by the Fed saying we're going to lower rates 4 times, I think the bond market responds to that, even though they haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So haven't done it, I think it's already been priced in, and now it's going back negative.
Yeah.
Now, were you going to say that, or are you just trying to ride my coattail, George?
No, there's an inverse relationship between the interest rates and the bond price. So as rates come down, the value of the bonds tend to go up. Well, rates aren't coming down. If anything, they're staying flat or even a little bit higher. That's why the bond market hasn't done so well this year.
No, because if you think about it, rates have came down a little bit. Not
a little
much.
Bit.
But if rates
close.
Go down, price of bonds go up. So rates came down a little bit.
Bonds go up in value.
No, but it's all expectations. Like people thought the Fed was going to lower rates 4 times. They didn't. The market priced that in probably at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And now they're realizing it's not going to happen, so they're pricing it out.
So they're okay. So I got the price for the Berkshire Hathaway Class A shares, $619,735 for one share.
The first time I remember that share working for Dean Witter, I believe it was like $82,000 or maybe $80,000. That was
back then it was
almost 30 years
grand.
Ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they have a Class B that you can buy. Which
that's
is less,
still pricey, though.
It's still pretty pricey, too.
I think you divide it by 10, so that's probably 6,000 a share or something, right?
60,000? Oh, 6,000. Yeah, you're right, 6,000.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing that also has done well, Tom, that's kind of that's interesting on the AI, because AI has done real well. So a byproduct of that is some energy companies. First Solar's up 40% because it takes a lot of energy to make those chips and do with the AI industry right now. So these energy companies that help supply that extra power have been doing pretty well.
Well, I think the solar is up, though, because they put a tariff on solar from China. So that's why we got a recent bounce off that.
Ah.
I mean, it might be a long-term play.
And that tariff's on solar panels and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Silicone products.
Yeah. Mm. But, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's going to be efficiency in directing that. You know, they actually make inverters now that sit on your roof that can release energy overnight. Because, you know, the way it's set up now, if you don't have sun, you don't have energy, period, right? But they're making them so it can absorb, sun during the day, and then it releases energy at night. That's a huge game changer, not so much for the U.S. because we subsidize, but for third world countries to have light at night, it's a big deal.
Oh, that's a big deal.
So that probably involves some chips or something. I don't know how it works. But
I got a quick stat here for you on 401ks, and then we'll take a break. So Fidelity came out with a report. And the what do you think the average 401k balance is now, Tom? Give me your best guess.
I would say $80,000.
$125,000 is the average balance in a 401k. I was a little surprised. It's an increase of 16% year over year. And the number of million-dollar 401k balances went up 43%.
Wow.
From 340,000 to 485,000 people have over a million in their 401ks. But
yeah, well,
we're up against our first break. We'll be right back. Money Talk. Someone told me
long ago. At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
This is Derek Hegeberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk. Tom Rush here with George Davis, Yuma Investment Group. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, Russ, congratulations coming up this week on your marriage.
Yeah, man, we're gonna do it. I never thought I'd do that again, George. You know, you make those mistakes and... Then all of a sudden you find the right one.
That's right.
You never know.
No.
Yeah, no mistakes. You got two great kids out of it.
I have great grandkids, great kids. You know, great, really,
it all happened for a reason.
Absolutely right. You're exactly
and
right.
This one's happening for a reason, too. We're happy for you.
We're talking for retirement savings, so they have some stats. So if you're under 35, the median 401k is $19,000.
Hmm.
Basically, they think you should have about 49,000 in there by the time you're 35, and 35 to 44, you should have 142,000.
Okay.
And that medium is only 45,000. So basically, what this shows is Americans are way underfunded in their retirement, and everybody thinks Social Security is going to be the answer, but that's only going to fund about 40%, you know, on average. So people need to start getting serious about how they spend their money.
Yeah.
What's the answer to that, George? Pay yourself first.
Pay yourself first.
Don't pay any bills. Pay yourself first. 401k.
Don't pay
your bills. Pay yourself first. Worry about all the other bills later. Because what most people do is they pay all their bills and nothing's left over. And then, constantly.
Well, how do you not pay your bills?
I don't know. I mean, you got to make yourself a priority over, you know. Once you have a couple late fees in that, then you're going to stop going to Starbucks every day and realize you're not as good as you thought you were.
Bill collectors will be screaming at you. Your savings account
credit
never
score
will
go down.
That's true, but you've got more in your 401k, so yeah. Huh.
I mean, you know, it's like tough medicine, right?
No, it is tough.
Pay yourself first.
That's
you
what you're saying.
You got to deal with how the other money gets allocated, but, you know, you're not going to have much of a choice. Mm-hmm. Pay yourself first.
So some of the percentages, what should you be contributing, Tom? I mean, you hear 10% is the way to go. Looks like the average is 14.
I think that 10% was the old number. The new number is 15.
Okay.
And if you want to retire earlier, go 20, 25. And if you think about it, like when I first got in the business at Dean Witter, I think I was making $19,000 base. And I thought, if I can only make, you know, 40 grand, and then you make 40, if I can only make, you know, 80 grand. So when you make it, it somehow evaporates, right? Yeah. I mean, you always think, if I can only make 100,000.
Yeah.
To make more money is not the answer either. Really, mm-hmm. It's just the discipline. The most people that I see that have, you know, the more money and retirements and okay, it's just a discipline approach. Get disciplined with your money, just like a lot of people are disciplined with their exercise, and do it over time and take mm-hmm. risk. Put a, you know, a mattress for that won't work. But so anyways, you know, with Social Security, by 2033, you know, if it's underfunded, then you're only going to get about 70 cents on the dollar on that too.
7 cents?
70.
Oh, 70.
Yeah. So that, you know, even if you're counting on Social Security, that might be at jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, 2033, they say, on the Social Security. So on the 401k, people tell me, well, I'm putting in the match. You know, I'm getting enough to get full advantage of the match, whether that's 4 or 5%. And then they think, why would I want to put more above that? I'm like, well, you're saving for yourself. You know, you're not getting an extra match, so they stop there.
It's your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And now, a lot of times now, they're with 401ks and owners, they're doing the 401k where there's an automatic increase each year. So you can turn it on. So each year you're giving yourself a little bump up of 1%.
So what you're saying,
you don't even notice it when your salary goes up, you're putting more money away.
So what you're saying is a lot of these 401ks have a new mechanism where if you set it up, they will increase your amount withdrawn by, say, 1% a year.
Yeah, correct.
And if you do it over time, you won't fill it as much.
And when you sign up, you're automatically enrolled. You have to actually opt out of the 401k. Yeah, Back in the day, people would just.
But that's not as common as we think. I don't see that a lot. It is something the business owners can opt for, but I still.
Are you talking about automatic enrollment when they go in, they're in, and they have to opt out instead of.
Yeah, it's not as common as you think.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's a mechanism, but, you know, it's not. A lot of business owners, you know, because we've set up a plan, that's on the plan documents, you can request. You want automatic enrollment, and mm-hmm. most people I talk to say, well, it's their money. I don't want to mess with their money. If they want to enroll, they can. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like they're too
much. I was thinking some of the larger corporations.
I'm thinking Yuma County, because that's where we're at, George.
Yes, Tom, that is where we're at.
But anyways, so let's talk about some common things that people aren't aware of. So one of the common things is trying to – if you're down in a position, stock position, and it's not in a retirement account, you can take losses. Everyone knows about harvesting gains, take profits. You heard of that saying? But no one ever thinks about taking losses. And the best thing to explain it is, say you buy a stock, it drops 40%, and that happens. Well, you can just sit there and wait till it goes back up to, you know, so you get your money back. Or what you can do is you can basically either sell it and take that 40% loss, goes on your taxes, right? You can write $3,000 a year off your income, and then wait 31 days later and buy it back. So you can harvest the losses mm-hmm. for your income tax. Now, if you think the stock might go up in 30 days and no one knows, what you could also do is say you have 100 shares, it drops 40%, buy another 100 shares, and then wait 31 days and then sell 100 shares. So you're back to your original position.
So why am I waiting 31 days? Because I want to buy the exact same stock back?
No, it's in the IRS code. They won't let you just sell a stock, take a loss, and 2 days later buy it back.
But I could sell Microsoft and buy NVIDIA.
No, you can. But I'm talking if you're tied up.
If you like the stock, you want to have the same one. Okay.
Yeah, you can switch stocks, but you just can't sell the same one and buy the same one for the tax loss.
I like that double down, though, so you can buy twice as many shares. Then if it goes up, you're kind of protecting yourself, and then you'll sell.
I mean, you could sell the stock. You just couldn't claim it on your taxes.
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay.
Completely, you know.
I mean, you could buy and sell every day the same stock if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, you could.
There's no reason to do it. But.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you could do is say you have a $10,000 stock loss, hypothetical, you can take that loss, and then you get to write off $3,000 a year off your income. So it take over 3.5 years to get, you know, tax benefit.
Uh-huh.
But if you're ever selling anything at a gain, a piece of property or any other capital gain, that will automatically offset it. So sometimes people are like, you know, you talk to them like, oh, I just sold a lot I had in Cowdy Wash or something. And they're like, well, I made X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that point, you can look for losses and try to sell them to try to offset some of that. And then 31 days buy back. And the big scope of the stock market, 31 days, stocks should be about the same price unless something good or bad has happened. It's not a lot of, yeah.
So that's kind of interesting, Tom, because if I had, say I had a gain, I sold my lot out in County of Washington, a gain of 10 grand.
Okay.
And then I had a stock that I sold and it had a loss of 10. Is that a wash or can I only do the $3,000
max? It's a wash.
Oh, so the $3,000 only applies if I don't have something to offset it with.
Yep.
Oh.
And then it's also a carryover. Let's just say you have $10,000 loss, you can only write off $3,000 per your tax return, and it's $3,000 of income tax. So you have $7,000 left over.
Mm.
That carries forward for you on your taxes. But say the following year, you sell something where you have a $7,000 gain, it would also wipe it out. So it wipes out for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I think a lot of people don't take advantage of. And usually come around, you know, November, December, you want to go through your positions and see if it's worth taking some losses, you know, before the end of the year.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do the strategy where you double down your shares, then you got to wait 31 days to sell. So you really want to do that buy before December 1st, because that's not 31 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to do it sometime in November. So if you wait too long, you won't be able to do that strategy.
So if I have 100 shares and I bought another 100 shares, now I have 200 shares. Is there a way to separate my sell to make sure I'm selling those first 100 shares that I had, or is it just automatically do that for me?
Nah, it depends on the brokerage company. Most of them do first in, first out, but okay. It depends on how it's set up.
So something you want to double check and make sure they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here's another little strategy that people overlook. If you inherit an IRA from anybody but your spouse, it's called a beneficiary IRA. So say you inherit one from your dad.
Okay.
That money goes in your name. They changed the laws a couple of years ago. Now you have to have all that money pulled out within 10 years. They don't care if you wait till the very last day of the 10 years or if you pull a little bit out every year. But at the end of the 10 years, that beneficiary IRA needs to be emptied. So one of the things we try to get people to do is pull money out of the beneficiary IRA like every year. So you divide it out by 10 years. So mm-hmm. The income tax, if you pull money out of a beneficiary IRA, it's taxable. There's no 10% penalty, by the way. It's just taxable. But we try to take that money and start funding Roth IRA money. Because the Roth IRA money grows tax-deferred and is tax-free on the way out. So it's a golden goose that, you know, lays the egg of no tax.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it'd be nice to, you know, say your dad left you $30,000 beneficiary IRA. We'll start pulling it out, pay the tax, and then start funding Roth money. Act like you don't have it. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon you'll have 30 grand in a Roth, which down the way with compounding and no tax would be a good thing place to be.
Yeah, because you have to pay tax on it anyway. So they got rid of that stretch. So in 10 years, you have to pull that money out. And the biggest problem is that if you're, say your parent dies and my parent dies and I'm in, you know, this time of my life, usually you're in a higher, you know, your best.
Yeah, by the time parents
you're
pass
money or, you know, your income's usually better. And so your taxes are going to be higher. So that's quite a burden on you too.
Yeah, and
in a shorter time frame, 10 years.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. If you put money in a Roth IRA and then you died, and say your spouse died too, your kids would get the beneficiary Roth with no mm-hmm. tax, and they would have 10 years to withdraw it.
Yeah, they still have to do
so 10 that money
the
should
Roth applies too.
They so that money would probably double in 10 years if you got a decent return or more. So anyways,
that's a good point and way to put it.
We'll take another break here. This is Money Talk, 560 AM. Hey, let's.
Watch out. You might get what you're after. Cool.
This is Derek Hagerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, at Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management.
Well, Prince there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
he died.
Welcome back.
Without a will.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. George Davis Sr. Tom Rush is here with me. How you doing today, Tom? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Yeah.
Yep.
Had some good tidbits today and 401k talk, and we're talking about some Roth IRAs, which we think are the best kept secret out there. So with the Secure Act came some changes on the RMD age. Let's talk a little bit about required minimum distributions and then also required beginning dates. So an RMD, Tom, as you know, if you have an IRA, then there's a certain age that you reach and the IRS wants their taxes. So you can't just let that IRA or 401k, continually go without you taking out these distributions. So they changed the ages. It used to be 70 and a half for years. And when the Secure Act came out and the Secure 2.0, what they did is they changed it to age 72 for the first time that you have to take your required distribution. Now, that's if you're born between July 1 of 49 and December 31st of 1950. That's age 72 for your required distribution. Most people are going to be on the age 73, which is January 1st of 51 through December 31st of 1959.
Yep, so pushing out the taxes further.
Pushing out, yeah.
You know why they're doing that?
Because they want people to save more, and there were some problems with COVID and
well, COVID
people are living longer too.
COVID's causing life expectancy to go lower.
Well, for
I think
one
they're doing
year.
It because they haven't indexed it over time, and people are living longer. So 70 and a half wasn't the right age, but it's going to go all the way up to 75%. By 2000,
age
75. But is it 2033 or 31 or something?
It's in another 8 years.
So, anyways, that's going to keep money in people's pocket a little longer.
2033.
Yeah,
is when that goes into it. So, you fall in that, Tom. You're born 1960 or later.
Yes.
So you get to wait till age 75 for your required distribution.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first year, let's say I turn 73 and I have my IRA, do I have to take it out that year? Do I have to take a required distribution?
So the year
the age you, I turn 73?
Yeah, the year you turn 73, even if it's December 31st, you got to take it, right?
I got to take it that year. But the very first withdraw I have up until April 1st.
Yeah,
that very first year they let you give you a little extra time to think
about it.
Well,
it's either or
plan.
Yeah, it's either or. If you're plan, if you know you got to take it that year, you can take it.
Correct.
But there's an extension in case the first time you forget about it. But April 1st, I mean, a lot of times isn't that long. It's 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you don't take it? What's the penalty?
The penalty is what used to be 50%.
Correct.
And they changed that now, where they dropped down to 25%. And if you file a petition and you have a pretty good reason, they'll even lower it to 10.
I think it's 10.
That came out with Secure Act, too. So.
Yeah.
But if you take it, that's interesting, because if you take it let's say you turn 73 and you're like, you know what, I'm going to wait, or you kind of lose track and you take it the next year when you're 74 and you take it on, you know, before April 1st. That was your year that you were 73, but you still have to take it twice that same year.
Yeah, so if you miss the year, you're going to have until April 1st, but you're going to have to do it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Some double income, yep.
Yeah. And the other thing on April 1st that's really important that people don't understand, that's called your required beginning date. So there's a required minimum distribution when you turn 73, for example.
Yeah.
But your actual required beginning date is April 1 of the next year. You know why that number is important, that date?
Why is that, George?
Because it depends on, let's say you die. So let's say, Tom, you turn 73.
Yeah.
And you make it until the next year and you die in February.
Okay.
That's before your required beginning date. That's not your RMD. When you pay your RMD, that doesn't start the clock. It starts April 1st after your age of 73. So if you die before that, your beneficiary doesn't have to take the RMD. They still have to empty it.
But if I know I'm going to be 73, say for 2024,
yep.
I can take it January 1st. I could take it June 1st. I could take it September.
Correct.
As long as I take it that year, I suffice.
Yeah.
So the April 1st is only if you're late and you forget, or you want to plan that way for whatever reason.
Right. April 1st is your required beginning date, even if you took it earlier than that, if you took your required distribution.
Yeah, that's the deadline.
Yeah, that's the
drop
deadline.
Dead deadline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
So more and more rules out there, and it kind of seems to me like Congress, because that's who passes a lot of this, and they make rules, and then the custodians and people can't even keep them up to date. So it's like they're not even talking to the left arm, right arm. They're just changing things, and then the companies are trying to figure out how to handle them. Because some of the changes they made, like they couldn't even put them into effect for like a year or two later.
Mm-hmm.
So it just doesn't seem
and
like
then they delayed
wise.
Them.
Yeah.
Just kind of pushed them down the road because they weren't ready. So yeah. How about on the 401ks, Tom, for the workplace exception? So it used to be in your 401k, let's say you turn 70 and a half and you're still working, they would make you take out an RMD, so there was required minimum distributions before the Secure Act came out.
Yeah, but long as you're working, you can push it out, right?
Yeah, you can push it out.
Yeah.
So if you're working till 75 and you're still contributing, you have to be with this company that the 401k is with. You can't be an old one with another company.
Yeah. And I think you can't be the owner of the company.
And you can't be 5% owner
or
more.
Because owner would stay on payroll till they're 100 if they could do it.
Oh, that's why they do it.
That's
way.
What Russ is going to do, stay on payroll.
So on required minimum distributions, the other thing that's kind of interesting, and you use this tactic, Tom, is if you have, say you have three IRAs, maybe one's in real estate, one's in securities, and one's in whatever, Bitcoin. Can I take all those IRAs together, those three, add up the dollar amount, and take my required distribution from any one account?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, I can. I don't have to go individually and take the RMD from each one. I can consolidate and pick whichever one I want. So if I have one that maybe has illiquid assets.
Or it's down, you don't want to touch it.
Or it's down, yeah.
But the problem we see with people that have multiple IRAs is they always miss one. Not always, but. So that's a big advantage at some point to consolidate your IRA accounts. So you just have to have one number, one withdrawal,
mm-hmm.
and that way you're not, you know, and we don't, you know, a lot of times you advise, you know, if you have three different accounts or three different custodians, you know, the like for our example, the advisor doesn't know, remember what you have elsewhere, so they're not in charge of that. You got to be responsible yourself.
Yeah, they're not going to tell you. The brokerage companies or custodians don't tell you, hey, make sure you're doing this.
Send out letters and that. So they do tell you, but people, for whatever reason, don't get the mail or they throw it away. They don't remember. Mm-hmm. But they do have an obligation to warn you.
Yeah.
But if you switch, move or something, you know, you might not get it.
Yeah. So how about on the 401k? If I have multiple 401ks, can I add those up and take my RMD from one 401k?
I would say no.
Oh, nice job. It is no. Yeah. 401ks don't apply like the IRAs. You can't take just from one to satisfy all three or four. You have to take each one individually.
Yeah.
So that's another problem that people have. They think they can just add up their 401ks and take an RMD.
Now, what you could do there, if you're still working and you're over the RMD age, you can see if the 401k plan document would accept new money in from rollovers. And I think if you rolled your old 401ks to the new 401k and you're still working, I don't think you'd have to pull it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little tactic.
It is a tactic. So you're talking about if I had an old 401k from an employer and I moved my 401k in there.
If the plan allowed it, which is another question, but yeah, a lot of them do.
Usually they will.
Yeah, so that way you can avoid that.
Yeah.
So
what happens if you do miss an RMD? We touched on that.
They want you to file it right away. So if you, it shows good faith. And I think if you do it within 2 years, then you have a letter of why you missed it. It's only 10%.
Yeah, it's called a waiver. You request a waiver.
Yeah.
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 But like you said, it used to be a harsher penalty of 50%. And the IRS would, if you did a waiver, they would usually lower that down to 25 or 10.
I think it makes sense. 50% penalty is pretty tough on anything.
That's real tough.
Yeah. So the main thing I think most people need to do when you break it right down is a financial plan, because so many people shoot from the hip and do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. They have it all worked out in their head how it's going to go. But your head can't calculate inflation, compounding interest, or taxes. And those are the things that will beat you up over time. So a true financial plan will include that, include if there's rental properties, or even if you say, hey, I'm going to sell my house and throw that for my retirement. So it could do all different kinds of variables. And only about 10% of Americans have ever done a financial plan. So I haven't had one person say, this was a waste of time, because it's really an eye-opener if you're funded or not funded. And if you're underfunded, there's really four things you can do. Work longer, put more money away, get a better return on your money so it grows faster, or become more debt-free so that you don't need as much to live on. Those are the four ways to increase your retirement age or make it faster so you can retire sooner.
I like that fourth one. I was thinking there was going to be three.
The debt, right? The debt, yeah, if you have no debt, then you don't need as much money.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's not the American way. The American way is we get in debt, George.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Run the credit cards up.
Yeah. So, but even people that think they're in a pretty good position, if you do a financial plan, they might not be. I'll give you a quick example. I had a client who was in the medical field, had about $10 million, was going to retire. And that's a nice little nest egg. But he had all these ideas. He was going to live in Europe, buy a house, live in the United States. And I think he's going to live back home because he came from a different country. So he wanted three houses, and he was going to do all this stuff. So we plugged it all in, and even with a $10 million account, by like 11 years, it was all gone. And he found that hard to believe. So it's all about lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, money in, money out. So just because we get our big question people get is, well, how much should I be putting away? Or do I put away more than other people? And I say, it doesn't matter what other people are putting away. It matters on your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if you have a decent lifestyle, no debt, you need less money. So don't compare yourself to other people, because it's not a good comparison.
Yeah.
Because their situation different from yours.
Hmm.
So
that's good advice.
We'll take another break here. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m.
This is Derek Hagerberg, branch manager with Guild Mortgage, NMLS number 180899. Thank you for making us Yuma's best mortgage lender 7 years in a row. At Guild Mortgage, we're more than just a lender. We're your trusted guide through the home buying journey. We do offer educational workshops for first-time home buyers, credit and budgeting, and also real estate investing. We proudly serve your friends, family, and neighbors, answering questions and finding lending solutions. How may we serve you today? Give us a call at 928-247-9089 or visit guildyuma.com.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they manage money for their clients differently from any other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. Many advisors sell and buy investments that charge clients commissions on each transaction and make commissions when they make trades for their clients. Yuma Investment Group doesn't sell any commission investment products. They never earn commissions on trades. They have trading discretion on your accounts, so they're able to manage accounts on a daily basis without having to pick up the phone to get permission to buy or sell an investment. Yuma Investment Group fees are structured, so they do better when their clients do better. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. If you're retiring soon or need help with your portfolio, visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com to find out why investors like you switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk, 5, 6 a.m., Tom Rush here, George Davis. Next week, I'm going to be in Oceanside, California.
What?
For their 18th annual. A bunch of family goes there, first cousins, second cousins, siblings, but that's about close to 100 of us go over there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be on the beach, George.
You stay on the beach there in the little cabanas.
Cottages.
Yeah, pretty fun.
So...
good for you.
And usually if you go over there, like the weather here is not that bad. I mean, it's breaking 100 barely, but usually if you go over there early enough, it gets pretty cold over there. I don't mind it, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, overcast, but so.
Yeah, this is the time of year to get out of Yuma during the summer, definitely during the heat. So,
what's the biggest mistake you find people do when they say, let's talk about financial planning, since I think that's like. Having a financial plan is almost like having an MRI in a body. Mm-hmm. You can find out a lot of information that, you know, whether it's successful or non-successful.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now that I have my National Social Security Advisor certificate, I've been studying and diving deeper into Social Security, so I understand it, the ins and outs. I think the biggest mistake is, not really a mistake, but people always ask, hey, I'm going to take Social Security. 62, I don't care what you say, George, I'm going to take it and grab it because either it won't be there or, you know, other reasons, whether your health and all that. But I that's been my biggest thing now. We have a calculator in that.
But there's a stat. Plan. There's a stat. I think the stat is like close to 65% of people take out 62.
Yep.
And that's
a lot.
It's a lot because people, you know, short-term gratification, or they think, I hear it's going to go under, so I got to take it sooner.
Yeah.
But well, really.
You know what the break-even age is? If I take 62 or I wait till 67, 76 is the break-even age.
So if you died before 76, then you should have took it at 62?
Smart move, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you better make sure you die then. You want to regret it.
Well, if you make it past 76, then you're making more money. But, you know, a lot of people don't want to wait.
Short-term gratification, George.
You know, the other big thing is the Medicare. How do you bridge that gap? If I'm retiring at 62, I'm taking Social Security, but Medicare doesn't start till 65.
Yeah, so we have a lot of people that just will work their full retirement age for Medicare because that's a big cost.
Deal. Yeah.
Now, one of the things I see people do too is they take it at 62 because it's going to go broke, but they don't realize if you make more than $20,000 a year, then they keep half of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another trap that people get into, and they're like, "Hey, my Social Security check."
If you make more than $19,300. You mean at a job outside?
By working, yeah.
Once you're younger,
W-2, yeah.
Work. Once you're real old like me, it doesn't matter.
Now, once you hit full retirement age, you can make as much as you want. Yeah,
correct.
But what people don't understand is if you take it at 62 compared to full retirement age, which is 66, 67, depending on when you're born. It takes a 25% haircut. So really, for a 5-year period, 25% haircut, you know, is 5% a year.
Mm-hmm.
But you might think, that's not that bad. But then Social Security gets a cost of living adjustment, and on average, it's like 1.5. But now you take that 1.5% for another 5 years. Well, you just gave up another 10%. So if you that all adds up.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And now that they've reached that age, I was talking to a friend of mine, and his full retirement age is 66 and 10 months. So he's in that last 2-month window before it goes to 67.
Yeah.
But once you get into that 67 age, Now it's 5 years between age 62 and 67, so it's really a 32% haircut, not a 25.
Yeah.
Though it does affect you by, you know, it drops down.
Yeah. And a haircut, haircut's not grooming. It means you lose money.
Lose money for life. I mean, yeah. Plus your cost of living adjustments, I mean, are going to be smaller, too, because you have a smaller balance.
Unless you really need the money, I mean, to put food on the table or something, or you're in bad health, it really behooves you to look at waiting.
Yeah, well, I hear it also because the job is a grind and they don't want to be working anymore. So
yeah, but that doesn't mean you can not work. Just don't take Social Security.
Yeah, or do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah. So what's another thing you see people do that is not good? I think people make the mistake is, I had a couple in here who were new clients. They thought they were maxing out the 401k at $12,500, was it? Which was like 6 years ago. So a lot of these 401ks and that can go up over time. And if you don't adjust your payment, then you're not, it's not going to go up. So they were really, could have been, had a lot more money, and they had the means to max out 401k, but they were stuck in where it was 6 years ago. So that's another issue.
And that applies to Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs too, because they've been going up. So
yeah. So do you find that?
Yeah, I do find that. So as I'm gonna max out my Roth, here's $5,500. I'm like, well, wait a minute, it's now seven if you're under 50, eight if you're over,
yeah.
And then you kinda get a little bit surprised. So that's a good point.
The other thing that people I actually think this is probably the number one mistake is people look at their budget, look at how much they can take from whatever money they got, Arizona retirement, Social Security, 401k, and they say, I can pay all my bills, I can retire. I mean, I can, you know, live month to month. You know, I got a little money left over maybe, but I can retire. But what they don't factor in is inflation. At 1.5% or 3% inflation, your buying power would get cut in half in 20 years. So, yeah, you could technically retire today and you could live for a while, but if you live long enough, your money's not going to go that far and you're going to become more and more pinched. And, you know, there's people that, you know, we have clients even that can't take a vacation. You know, they don't eat out much. They, you know, you're on a budget. I mean, you got to eat, you know. So that's not a great position to be in.
And that's a good point. You always bring up inflation, Tom, because if you have a pension plan, whether it's federal or state, most pension these days do not have that COLA attached to it like Social Security does. So if you think right now, oh, I'm going to be getting $3,000 a month, I can pay my bills, I'm fine, I can retire on that. Then in 20 years, like you said, it's going to be $6,000.
Well, yeah, it's your $1,500 buying power gets cut in half.
Yeah, it just gets cut in half.
And by the time people usually figure that out, they're like in their mid-70s or older. Very tough to go out and get a job, you know, just depends on what you do. But, yeah, not the right time to be trying to get a job.
Yeah.
So you're better off doing a plan, see if it fixes. We're, a lot of times we're the bearer of bad news. You're like, you know what? You got to work 4 more years. And, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat because you can or work part-time. Working part-time actually helps a lot. Some people, if you do a plan and they say you make, you know, 60 grand a year and you say, okay, well, go find a job that's 30,000. Maybe it's a couple of days a week or whatever. That partial thing will let your money continue to grow. And that is a big effect.
Yeah.
So
another one I get, Tom, is people will do their budget or their spending and they'll underestimate. So maybe this together as a couple, they make 120, say, and then their spending, they put 60, you know, 60,000 a year does sound like, you know, a decent amount of money. And I can, you know, that's all we need to do for a living. Maybe they have some vacations in there and home improvement, but there's still about a $40,000 discrepancy between the income and their spending. I'm like, well, what's that? Are you saving that $40,000 a year? No, all our money's gone. We don't have anything
so you're
extra.
Spending it, yeah.
Yeah, so you're spending it other places, and which brings us back to what you were saying earlier.
And the last thing is, a lot of times people think, well, when I get older, I won't travel as much. I won't need as much money. But all that money you think you're going to save when you get older because you're not going to travel and much will go to medical expenses. So everyone thinks Medicare is free. Well, no, if you have a $100,000 bill, you know, you're going to cover like 20% of that or so.
Don't get sick.
Yeah, don't get sick. So
stay healthy like Russ.
Hey, we're up for our time. This is Money Talk. Everyone have a great weekend. Stay safe.
With
with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.